Good afternoon and welcome to the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. An interesting market trade today. We're going to dive into what has been happening with the trade, not only from a livestock perspective that saw the big drops, but don't forget the Feds had their conversation today. We're going to talk more about that. We'll see what was the turnaround for this corn market with the beans as the wheat continued to trade lower. Lots to look at today as Arlen Suderman is joining us. He is with StoneX. So let's start out with this Fed statement that came out at 1 o'clock this afternoon. What was your takeaway?
Once again, rather confusing. The Fed did give some clarity that it will not change interest rates at this meeting, and that was not expected. And when I looked this morning, Fed fund futures are trading 99% odds that there would be no change. And I think the Fed had pretty well communicated that in the past. It did also communicate that we've seen a pause in the progress toward moving to the 2% inflation target in the data in the first quarter of this year. No secret there. I thought that was significant that they acknowledged that. Something that's received very little conversation in the trade that does have significance, though, is that we anticipated that they would start scaling back the pace at which they're shrinking their balance sheet. What does that mean? Over the past, what do I want to say, almost 2 years now, they have been reducing their purchases of debt certificates to the tune of $1.14 trillion per year. That's how they withdraw money, stimulus money, from the economy. So over getting close to $2.5 trillion that they've pulled out of the economy since they started doing that, at a pace of $95 billion per month, so $1.14 billion or trillion per year. They're reducing that to about $60 billion, so they're pulling a little better than a third off of that, so slowing the pace at which they reduce the balance sheet. That can actually have a little bit of a stimulative effect for the economy and could near-term create more problems in getting down to the 2% mandate. But they're doing it because back in 2019, when they tried to shrink their balance sheet, they got to a point where the extra cash in the system started to run out and we started having some problems in the credit markets. And they're trying to avoid that. And the estimates have been, we've been monitoring that this year since really about the first of the year. And we estimated that they would start running into some of those credit problems in the credit markets sometime around June of this year. And so they're trying to get ahead of that in reducing that. And I really still believe that some point before the end of this year or maybe next year that we will actually see them go back to quantitative easing, because when you look at the amount of debt certificates that the government is going to be dumping onto the market this year, it's expected to be up by about 35% this year across the yield curve, just simply because of the pace of government spending relative to revenue coming in. So with all of that extra supply of debt certificates, if the supply is bigger than the demand, that reduces the value of the treasuries. But when you reduce the value of treasuries, that means the yields of those treasuries go up. And so in order to put a lid on or to slow the growth in interest rates, then you have to increase the supply of or the demand for buyers. And so that means that the Fed is reducing the pace at which it's buying. It's still buying. It's going to be buying a little bit more than what it has been. And as a result of that, we saw interest or treasury yields drop on the announcement. Even though the Fed said it's not close to cutting rates because of that announcement on the balance sheet, therefore they felt like there's going to be more demand for treasuries, therefore lower interest rates in the near term. And so we saw treasury yields pull back, and that helped the dollar pull back, and that is ultimately good for commodities.
So how do you see that? Because you always do a great analysis of bringing it back to the grain and livestock side. How do you take that Fed information and transfer it to agriculture?
Well, I still think this is part-time. I think ultimately that the Fed is going to have increasing problems in controlling interest rates. And keep in mind that they only actually control the overnight rate, the short-term overnight rate. And they can only try to influence the longer-time rates that affect us in agriculture. And the more the government's debt becomes a problem, then the more that puts upward pressure on interest rates. And particularly as we get close to the end of the year, when the debt ceiling agreement agreed to in June of last year, where they suspended the debt ceiling, if that becomes an issue again, we could see another downgrade in our nation's credit rating. And when that happens, our interest rates go higher as well. So that's going to be the ultimate concern in agriculture, because that affects storage of grain, that affects the operation notes of the industry, and impacts the carry in the market when we're in a surplus situation. There's so many different implications of that overall. And ultimately, that's what we have to get under control. Sounds political, but it's not. It's pure economics. And what we anticipate this year is we see in both parties during elections, we tend to see an increase in spending or stimulus, particularly when the one in office is struggling in the polls. So it's estimated that Janet Yellen will probably have about $750 billion at her disposal in the Treasury in order to try to stimulate the economy, which is also inflationary.
All right, well, stick around, folks. We've got a lot more coming up as we get ready for the second half of today's Channel Final Bell. When we come back, we'll talk about the USDA and this meat market, what we're seeing from a livestock trade, how that's going to weigh in, and, of course, have an effect as well on what we see going on within the grain complex. It's a lot more coming up, the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network.
Joe Gangwish back with you for Channel Seed. Steve Bristol of Bristol Ag is our guest on this channel chat. Steve serves the central Nebraska area out of Ravenna. So, Steve, what's been the most rewarding part of being a Channel Seed Pro?
You know, being able to solve problems for guys. Lots of times I have growers come to me with all kinds of issues that they face on their farm, and I utilize my local and practical trials and experience to create solutions that fit the individual farm needs.
What are the advantages of Channel and regional brands coming together?
You know, we have the best and most complete seed portfolio in the corn and soybean industry, and it just got better. No seed company has a hybrid built specifically for each field's individual demands other than Channel.
For more on what Channel can do for you, see Steve at Bristol Ag in Ravenna. You can also find Bristol Ag and Channel on Facebook or contact your local Channel seed professional in Nebraska, Kansas, Wyoming, or Colorado.
ARVN.
Welcome back to the Channel Final Bell here on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. Our conversation does continue with Arlen Suderman. Arlen, of course, is with StoneX. I wanted to, before we jump to the livestock side of the trade action, let's talk about this wheat market, because for so long, the wheat had been the leader. I mean, we had seven straight consecutive days of higher trade. Didn't obviously happen the last couple of days. What's your takeaway of the movement of this market?
Yeah, when we look at the wheat market, it showed a lot of volatility of late. It's really been what we talked about for the last several months, and we were telling our customers, is the funds had built such massive short or sold positions in the wheat market that if anything scared them out of those positions, who's going to take the other side? Because the farmer has largely sold. And so if you got a big short position, you need to buy it back. Well, you need to have someone willing to sell you the position to buy back. And if the farmer doesn't have the grain to sell, how's that going to happen? And so that's exactly what happened. When the funds holding these big, massive short positions suddenly realized we have rapidly deteriorating crop conditions in the southern and central plains. We have deteriorating production estimates out of Europe where it's excessively wet. And we have drought starting to build in southern Russia, which is their primary production area. And so what was too early to really put hard numbers on production losses, the funds were nervous with those big short positions. They started covering. The farmer wasn't there on the other side of it to counter it. And we got a nice rally out of it, 60, 70 cents off the lows. So that was pretty good. When they got their short positions pulled back to where they were more comfortable with what we now know and stable, then the buying stopped. And therefore, we were vulnerable to slipping lower again, particularly as we saw farmer new crop selling start to come in to at on the sell side of the market. So that's what we're seeing play out in the wheat market right now. Ultimately, it comes down to what's going to happen in the central and southern plains with the crop and what's going to happen in southern Russia. It's a little bit on the early side to be counting out the crop in southern Russia, and they do have some showers for next week. Our forecasters we work with don't have a lot of confidence those showers are going to make much of a difference, but the market used that as excuse to stop the short covering. Corn and soybeans tried to follow along. The funds there also covering short positions there. But unlike wheat, there's a lot of farmer corn and soybeans to be sold, not just the United States, but perhaps even more in Brazil, because Brazil sells off our Chicago market as well. So we even saw in the last CFTC report that the U.S. farmer was actively selling corn and soybeans against the rally. There was more selling in Brazil, and that kind of countered the short covering in corn and soybeans and why we didn't see as much of a rally in corn and soybeans there. Soybeans have since come back now and are risking a triple bottom on the charts. Triple bottoms have a tendency to not hold, and so that's somewhere an area, even though today we finished with some modest gains there, I'm still nervous when I look at those charts and want to make sure we can hold above the recent lows, because we had a triple bottom there. It leaves us very vulnerable to falling right through it. So that market looks vulnerable to me right now.
So what's your takeaway of this movement we've seen within this cattle trade?
Well, when you look at the cattle market, you got two things at play. You got supply and demand fundamentals at play. And then you have the emotions of the story about bird flu. And that's a significant factor right now. The funds, because of the tight supply of cattle this year, had built a lot of ownership in the cattle market. And so therefore, when the story about bird flu hits, there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty to it there. And they're saying, what if we get a headline that damages demand, either export demand or domestic demand? What if we get that headline unexpectedly and we're vulnerable? So the funds are simply backing out of it. And that's particularly been hitting hard the feeder cattle market as well, because some people are saying, why should I own feeder cattle when and put them in a pen when this could happen, that headline could hit while those cattle are in those pens getting up to wait for slaughter? And so that's the problem that this market faces right now. We are already facing a demand problem with the consumer. We have no evidence to this date that this is a health risk for the consumer. But we don't know what the USDA is going to say when it reports the results of its tests on beef. And we don't know how it's going to say it, if it's going to be said in a way that the consumer understands. And so therefore the uncertainty, and that's where the pressure is coming from, with additional pressure of late being the stronger dollar, although that pulled back a little bit today.
All right, Arlen, we had so much to talk about and a lot we didn't get to, but what's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
StoneX.com or on X, formerly Twitter, ArlenFF101. You can direct message me there.
All right, that is today's Channel Final Bell. The Channel Final Bell brought to you by Channel Seed and your local Channel Seed professional. Just a reminder, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss not suitable to all investors. And that's the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network.